Hello and welcome to Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me today, the star of the show, the former WCW and ECW World Tag Team Champion, one of the greatest minds and bookers ever in the history of the business, the man behind the NWO, the man behind the WCW 83 Weeks of Dominance, the Games Master, the Taskmaster, the Devil himself, Mr. Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today, sir?
Great, JP. How are you, my friend?
I am doing very good. I was just looking at something online not that long ago, and I was laughing. Buff Bagwell had this Twitter account or his social media, and everything was all this woke stuff, and it finally came out that it wasn't really Buff posting it. I don't know if you saw that. Yeah, what do you think about Buff? Nope.
It's not Buff, or it is Buff?
No, it's not Buff. It was somebody else.
Why do people do that? To get a laugh, or what do you think?
I don't know. He was supposedly with DDP trying to, like, re-transform his character. And, like, you know, I mean, DDP is really trying to help him. But, obviously, he probably says, hey, you know, you got to change up your social media and some of the stuff that you said. And, I mean, he completely went, like, from one real extreme to the other.
Oh, on his social media?
Yeah.
What was his social media earlier?
Like a lot of pro conservative stuff and just like, you know, like old school wrestling stuff. And, you know, he likes certain like old school things about the professional wrestling business and even politics. He was much more on the conservative side. Then all of a sudden it was he loves like this guy, Effie. He loves all like the newer guys and the indie guys. And he was totally liberal and he was quote unquote based and all this other stuff. It was really, really interesting. Just that people were buying it.
Were they both fake accounts or just the latter one?
Just the latter one. So it was his real account, but he let somebody else control the social media. So he said, hey, you know, post whatever you want, but I want to become a baby face. Like to the woke social media community,
right,
and
right.
I mean, people bought it hook, line, and sinker. They were like, "Oh, I love Buff now," and saying all this stuff about him.
You know, we're at a crazy time in this country, JP, and I love history. Go back and watch some. The precursors, what happened before World War One, World War Two, Vietnam, you know, people forget that this country has been divided for a long time, going back to Vietnam. You know, hell no, we won't go, and then the fights in the cities between the Hawks and the Doves. It's pretty crazy. And what I was thinking was, we have not really transformed from gangs, have we? I mean, if as long as someone's saying something that fits your narrative, they can be a piece of shit, but you'll agree with them, you know? So it's crazy. I mean, wouldn't you think that if someone should have caught on to it being such an extreme difference? You know, he didn't get a lobotomy, right? Did he?
No, not that I know of, right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think I would have caught on that. It was a joke. Was it kind of like done tongue-in-cheek cheek? Or was it straight up trying to be a shoot?
No, he was trying to be a shoot and pretend that he had changed his ways. And
oh, cool.
What was your experiences like with Buff? Like, what was he like backstage and stuff? You know, away from the ring.
You know, it's crazy. I got along with Buff. I actually brought him into WCW. Bill Eady asked me to do him a favor. He was out in Texas when they had that global wrestling. Was it global?
Mm-hmm.
And he said the kid ain't making money. He was a handsome stranger. And I looked at him. He had a great body and he could work. And we brought him in. I never, ever had a problem with Buff. I really liked him. he's had demons, or did. I hear he's cleaning up, right?
Right. That was all a part of him getting clean. That's why he cleaned his social media and everything. He was trying to completely clean himself up.
And is he still with Paige?
The last I heard, yes, but that camp with Butterbean and everything else, that they were, it was like 4 months or something, so I think it was ending.
Okay. You know, Paige has done wonders, right? What was wrong with Butterbean?
Very out of shape. He got really big. He could barely move, so it was a lot of, like, mobility and getting him to eat right and getting him the proper diet. So it was a lot of exercise, DDP yoga, and, like, how to basically cook your meals and not rely on, you know, all this processed food and stuff that he was eating.
Right, right. Paige has done wonders, you know? I mean, he did wonders for Jake. Scott was coming along. I hope the best for both Butterbean and Buff. Buff, you know, we all bring things on our own, but then stuff starts to get attached to us. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And sometimes you got to let shit go, too. You know what I mean? I'm not knocking Buff, but talking about getting fired by the WWF 22 years ago, you know, if you live in the past, you die every day. You got to go forward.
Well said. I just thought it was so funny that, like, he was posting all this woke stuff that he probably doesn't even know exists. You know, and some of the phrases and stuff is like, you know, it's a 50-something-year-old guy. He has no idea what's going on with some of that stuff.
Yeah. How old is he?
I want to say 54, but let me double check. I know he's obviously older, but he's not too old. Let's see here. Born. Oh, he's 52. Yep, he's 52.
Okay. Yeah, so I mean, I hope, and he's over Buff just to get straight, right? I mean,
yep.
Buff's over Paige's to get back on track. Well, I think Paige can help him, don't you?
Oh yeah, if you could help Jake and Scott Hall, you definitely could help Buff, I think.
Yeah. Well, we're sending our best wishes to the both. Butterbean and Buff.
For sure. And today's topic, WCW Bash of the Beach 1998, held on July 12th, San Diego, California, the Cox Arena, the attendance 10,095, the tagline, like skinny dipping in the shark tank, somebody's going down, the pay-per-view buys, get ready for it, 600,000. Crazy, right?
Gee. 600,000. What did WrestleMania do this year?
I don't know, because of the Peacock, the network. They don't really tell you. They say that 2 million people or something have it, so like that's how many people could possibly watch it. But you know that not that many are watching. I mean, that's just absurd.
Right.
But they kind of float that number out there. So not sure. I know like the big Mania with like Trump many, many years ago, WrestleMania 23, I think did 1.2 million, something like that. So, I mean, that was kind of like the bar.
Yeah. 600,000. Wow.
For a July pay-per-view.
Yeah. That's another thing in July. Wow. And that's the week that a lot of people go on vacation, right? 4th of July to go visit families. It extends, I mean, it's only 8 days later. Wow.
I was shocked looking back at it, but I was thinking, I was like, the mainstream coverage that Rodman, the Bulls, the Jazz, Karl Malone, they were getting at the time, I mean, that really, really helped you guys, especially Dennis Rodman. You remember, he missed practice. That was huge news to go to Nitro.
And I remember, I'm going to brain skip, what's the coach's name, the Bulls?
Phil Jackson.
Phil Jackson, of course. When Phil Jack, they said, hey, Rodman's at Nitro. He said, Dennis can do what he wants. Do you remember that?
Yep.
I mean, that was a plug, Phil Jackson saying it's okay for him to go Monday Night Nitro rather than practice for the championship.
Did you almost not like that he said that, just for the fact that if he said he was against it, I think it would have got even more headlines. You know what I mean? Like, it would have got more buzz.
Yeah, but, you know, Phil Jackson has a Buddhist philosophy of life, right? So he tries not to get upset at a lot of things. So I kind of thought it was, in one respect, yeah, if we're going for ratings, yeah, it would have been better off. But the other one was, it showed a really different side of a coach to me. You know what I mean? Because he didn't do it with any animosity. It was like, oh, I let him go to the store. You know, it was almost like that.
Pretty funny, too, if you look at Last Dance, the Bulls documentary, which is awesome, about Michael Jordan, the Bulls in that last season. When he walked into practice the next time, Jordan said to him, hey, look, it's Rod the Bot, it's Rodzilla. So you know Jordan was probably watching Nitro.
Yeah, and Jordan and Flair are friends.
Yes.
And Jordan and Brad Daugherty, he had a lot of friends in the NBA. Especially anybody that played in North Carolina, back up Duke and up there, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Did you think, though, like that Rodman actually would miss practice for Nitro, or you were like as shocked as everybody else?
No, because I knew Dennis was free spirit. And I knew he was doing it to get publicity for himself. You know what I mean? He was stirring the pot over in the NBA. You know, what everybody forgets, I'm not a huge basketball fan anymore, but I used to be. Will Chamberlain, Bill Russell, and then I think it's Dennis Rodman is the greatest rebounders of all times, right? But didn't Dennis win 5 of them in a row?
Oh, no doubt, yeah. Yep. Rebound king.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, people forget how great a basketball player Dennis Rodman was.
He was so good that Jordan would let him take a vacation and Phil Jackson let him take a vacation in the middle of the season to go take a few days off.
Yeah.
It was almost like, yeah, just be ready for the playoffs. You know what I mean? Like, go do whatever you want. Yeah. Be ready for the playoffs.
Yeah, it was like the Allen Iverson. Practice? Practice? What are you talking about? Practice, you know? Remember that?
Yep. Oh, yeah, that was the best.
Yeah.
The thing, too, with Rodman, so you get Rodman and you get Malone. So you get Rodman and Hogan, and obviously the main event is DDP and Karl Malone. How does, like in your mind, like, how does that work out? Is that Bischoff? Is that Hogan? Like, who's getting everybody together? I mean, because it's the Bulls versus the Jazz, which just happened in the NBA Finals. The Bulls won in 6. And then you guys are getting literally the two big power forwards of the opposing teams in a tag team match.
I think that was Eric, and I kind of remember he had known people that knew their agents. And by that time, you know, a lot of guys wanted to come and wrestle that were sports celebrities. So, you know, I mean, it was pretty amazing that, and Eric had a handle on outside business and what and entertainment with. That gave him a step up in some of the other promoters. He saw what people liked, and then he had the balls enough to reach out, and they said, yeah.
When this is going on, I mean, obviously this is a big coup, right? You're thinking, wow, ESPN, you know, every sports network in the country is going to cover it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, you remember how hot Rodman was, didn't he? Earlier that year, Mary Carmen Electra.
Yep, I believe so.
I mean, he was just feeding the publicity machine all year, right? Didn't that was the same year he dressed up in the wedding dress, right?
I think so. Either that or the year before. Yeah, I remember it was one of those late 90s years. Yep.
Yeah, he was just feeding the machine.
It's funny, too, like when you look at it, it's like, wow, the media would just eat up, you know, basically whatever he's throwing out there. You know what I mean? He was just like the media darling, but in like a controversial way. Like they couldn't wait to see like what he was going to do next.
He was good copy, as they say in the journalist business, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So Nitro, kind of leading up to the show, is going to have Goldberg win the world title over Hogan in the big Georgia Dome, over 41,000 people there. You get a 4.8 rating. I mean, it, obviously, it's doing very well. It goes a little bit back and forth after that, though, as far as WWF winning some, you guys winning some, then eventually, we've talked about it, Ford Warrior comes in, you guys win a few, and then they win a few, and then they kind of take off with it. But was the design always for Goldberg to win the title before the pay-per-view and not on the pay-per-view?
No, it happened. I'm not sure if it was the Nitro before JJ came out or Saturday night. Which was it that he came out and said Goldberg's going to wrestle Hogan or Nitro?
Yeah, it was like a week before. Yep.
Yeah, it was exactly a week before. That's when Eric decided to do it. And it was because we were in the Georgia Dome and all the North Tower was going over. Everybody went over. Ted and this 41, I think it actually was about 43,000 people there. And I mean, it was packed. So for the first time in a long time, WCW got the glow from the North Tower. You know what I mean? Nobody could touch them at that time.
So obviously it's for Nitro. It's to get the big rating. It's to get Goldberg the title. It's to, you know, placate the North Tower and, you know, show them like, look at this, you know, look at the show. Do you wish it had more of a planning so you could make like more bang for your buck on a pay-per-view and really pump it up?
Yeah, I wish we could have done it on a pay-per-view. We might have made a million, huh?
I think so. Or could have, yeah. Definitely in that direction.
Yeah, definitely in that direction. That's right.
You think that's a huge mistake and a huge misstep and a huge miss out, or do you think that that's something you guys kind of overcame? It was just that WWF was too good at that point.
I think it was done out of necessity to placate the North Tower.
Probably the biggest attendance shows were at the Georgia Dome. There was 39,000 January of 99, and here in July of 98, 41,000 plus, almost 42,000. So those are the two big crowds in the Georgia Dome, but they're both on Nitros.
Yeah.
So you're not getting the big paper. It's amazing, but you're not getting the big pay-per-view gate, right? You could have charged more for the tickets, could have built it up more.
Right, right.
How come you guys didn't have a pay-per-view at the Georgia Dome?
I have no idea, but it was more to get a full building to gloat to the North Tower. Or maybe not gloat is the right word, but to show off.
And the centerpieces of both those big shows was Goldberg, you know, in right. Georgia, in, you know, in his home state, if you will. Right? He's the centerpiece. Obviously, Hogan, too, is the window dressing, but, I mean, he's really the centerpiece of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you look at that, did you ever say to Bischoff, like, ah, let's not, you know, give Goldberg the title yet, or is that kind of hoax decision?
I think Hulk called an audible.
Did they give you the heads up?
Oh, yeah, yeah, I mean. JJ is a very smart guy. He saw that coming way before they even decided to do it. He told me, he said, I bet they're going to do this title switch in Atlanta in front of the bus. I said, do you really think so? Then they wouldn't be put on pay-per-view. So it just makes sense to me. Ted's going to be there. Jane Fonda's going to be there. Hey, it looked good, didn't it?
Oh, no doubt. Definitely. I'm always just thinking like, oh, man, if it was like Hogan versus Sting and you built it up for a year at Starrcade, like, I mean, that could have been great as well because, you know, Starrcade does 700,000 with a year build. If it's Hogan Goldberg for a year build, you know, you build to a big Starrcade or even 6 month build, you might be looking at 700,000 plus, maybe pushing towards a billion.
Well, I learned something one time. You remember with Taz and Sabu were at ECW and they did that long build up?
Mm-hmm.
That hurt them. They went too far. And with Goldberg, you better get it done now because he may be exposed. You got to remember, Bill was just out of the power plant. 3 months later, the people were chanting Goldberg. It wasn't like he was a Sting. You know what I mean? He was a green guy who did a magnificent job. But the longer that build, I don't think it would have worked.
With,
and back then, wasn't talking.
With him, though, do you think, like, it would have been like, all right, like, if you held off, I mean, like, would it have been almost, like, exposed, like you say, kind of exposing, but would that have been, would that have led to, like, a quicker downfall, or do you think that there was a way around that?
No, I mean, I think that he came up like a comet through the sky, right? Flash. And that's where he should have won it, I think. I think the way he got there and the way he took it, I had never seen anything like that in my life. That instantaneously he was over. And he was Mike Tyson. That's what I developed him about. I don't think... if you drug it out, I think people would have started to see cracks in his performances. Because after a while, if you don't fight for the championship and they keep on saying you're undefeated, why aren't you wrestling for the title? You can't get involved in an angle because you don't talk. You're on an undefeated streak, so what's the angle going to be to separate you guys for a year?
Right. And when that match actually happens at the Georgia Dome, Goldberg beats Scott Hall later in the night. I mean, earlier in the night, then he faces Hollywood Hogan in the main event, becomes the world... he was actually the U.S. champion as well, but he goes and becomes a world champion. Karl Malone, DDP, and Mr. Perfect are all involved in the match. Kurt Hennig, all involved. Hogan turns around, eats a spear, jackhammer. Crowd goes nuts. Can you believe that pop that Goldberg got for beating the Hulkster?
No, it was unbelievable. The roof almost blew off.
Do you think Goldberg being the world champion and not being in the main event at this pay-per-view, like, hurts? I mean, it's going to be hard to be in the main event over Malone and Rodman, but do you think that the world champ should be the main event or no?
Yeah, I do. I do. I mean, you know, I knew why he wasn't, because of the outside influences, but the world champion should be used as the world champion.
Even with Malone and Rodman there?
Yeah, because they're not pro wrestlers. You want to elevate your business rather than their businesses, because they're not going to be coming back.
Did you have any problem or any say in it? Like, hey, maybe they shouldn't be the main event?
No. I'm sure that was in their contract.
So when was it decided that Goldberg was going to be the champ?
when they knew they were going to have a huge house in Atlanta.
So we're only talking like weeks here.
Yeah, actually, it was about 10 days.
Well, crazy, because if you think about it, like, Hogan's probably supposed to be the champion at the pay-per-view and, you know, and so on. But it's funny because the next few pay-per-views, Hogan is in the main event. It's going to be Hogan and Rodman here against DDP and Malone. But then the next pay-per-view, Hogan and Bischoff against DDP and Jay Leno, with Goldberg not in the main event again. So it's weird. It's like he's the big star. He's the big name, but he's not in the main event two pay-per-views in a row.
Yeah. Because Hogan had to be in the main event, I'm pretty sure.
Contract-wise?
Yeah.
Interesting. I just saw something
on a clip where they're talking about the downfall of WCW, and they brought up Hogan's contract, that he had to be, he had creative control and had to be in the main event on pay-per-views.
Well, you're the booker. Was that true? Was that accurate?
You know, a lot of, even though they didn't tell you everything that was in his contract. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yep.
So, I just assumed when he was on the main event, that was his thing. And I assumed when he came across and from New York, that's what it was going to be.
Did you ever, like, not disagree with him, but did you ever, like, kind of fight back against him and say, Hulk, it needs to be this way or that way, or there's no use in it?
There's no use. I mean, if somebody's set in their ways and they have complete control, there's no use. You can kind of try to nudge them to the water hole, but if they don't think they're thirsty, they're not going to... they're not going to agree with you, then animosity forms, and then they start to do things just to piss you off because they don't agree with you. And when they got creative control, there's nothing you can do.
With Goldberg, obviously, you know, he's going to fight Hennig in this pay-per-view, then the next match is going to be this whole NWO Battle Royal kind of thing. With him not being the main event, does that mean he's not the focal point, you think? Like, even though he's the world champion?
No, I think he was the focal point, but the other thing was the sideshow, the guys, the basketball players. People knew they weren't wrestlers. I think Bill was the central point, but it was like, you know, an accident. You can't take your eyes off it. What could happen? A basketball player could break his leg. You could get hurt real bad. It was like a freak show.
What did you think about Carl Malone?
Impressive guy. Really athletic. Could have been anything, probably. Any kind of sports athlete. He was great.
Did you think him and Rodman could, like, coexist? Cause, you know, like, they're bitter rivals on the court. Do you think, like, okay, you know, they got to trust each other here?
Yeah, and they were dear friends. You know, I think NBA has a lot of pro wrestling shit in it.
They were definitely pulling a lot on the court. It was great, yeah.
Yeah.
Were you rooting for the Bulls over the Jazz?
Yeah, I was a big Michael Jordan fan. I met Michael a couple of times with Rick.
Did he ever want to do something? Yeah, because you got Rodman, you got Malone. Did Jordan ever want to do anything?
No.
Just a fan.
Yeah.
So here we have Bash the Beach 98, obviously. Was it a point for you or maybe Bischoff to make Bash of the Beach like into a huge show? Because all of a sudden, like in 94, let's say, okay, that's the first one. Hogan isn't a big main event and it's his first match back and he's fighting Flair. I mean, that's huge. 95, it's on, you know, it's a huge show on the beach, literally Bash of the Beach. It's Hogan Vader. 96 is the NWO and Hogan's heel turn. 97 was Rodman's really wrestling debut and it's him and Hogan against the Giant and Luger. Was like Bash at the Beach on your radar? Like, hey, we got to make a huge WCW summer pay per view to kind of counteract SummerSlam. I know it's a month earlier, but is that in your mind?
Well, I don't think really we had it in our mind. I know I didn't, but I think too is we thought SummerSlam got such a jump on us that the summer, the buy rates are down. Usually, why not? We should have done it, but we didn't. It was one of those mistakes we made.
Seemed like, whether it was on purpose or not, it just seemed like Bash at the Beach was a huge, important show for you guys. It just always seemed to work out that way.
Yeah, it always did work out that way. And it's a mistake we made, and we should have gotten some kind of survey about that, too, but we didn't.
With Bash at the Beach, and you know, you're thinking it's not going to do great, and I'm saying 600K, was that something that was on everybody's mind? Like, holy crap, 600,000 buys.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah, everybody was shocked.
SummerSlam 98 that year, which is the Highway to Hell, Austin and Undertaker did 700,000. So, I mean, fans were flocking to wrestling in 98 and really, really buying pay-per-views.
Yeah, it was really hot then.
So the first match of the night was a dark match. Volano 4 and 5 defeated Damian and Ciclope in about 8 minutes. And then we start off the pay-per-view. You've got Tony Schiavone, you got Bobby the Brain Heenan, and Mike Tenay on the call for a Ravens Rules match. Saturn versus Raven. Raven would have to flock with him. Lodi and Riggs, of course, would be there. Raven ends up getting the win in about 11 minutes. Pretty decent match here. What do you think here? Raven's Rules, Saturn and Raven.
It was good. Scotty's a very smart guy. He knew how to separate himself from what was going on there. I mean, he was very, very, he looked at wrestling like a chessboard. And he could figure out the moves he had to make to stay alive five moves ahead of time. I'm a big Raven fan.
Now, it's said that here, a lot of people were saying that Saturn was a little off during this match. Did you detect anything, notice anything? Is that even true? Is maybe an injury, or was he off at all?
I didn't see him being off. I mean, I knew he had gotten hurt earlier. But, you know, nothing would surprise me, but I didn't, you know, when things are like your pay-per-view is so chaotic, you don't really get to see the guys for a few seconds.
What do you think about just Raven and Raven's Rules in general? Obviously, it's basically a hardcore match. Is that just something he wants? Do you like that? Do you feel like they needed it with the feud?
The thing was, Raven would have fallen into mid-card with all the other talent there. He had to have something to separate himself. Like I said, he's a smart guy. He figured out how to do it.
Do you think that doing Raven's Rules and stuff, it's kind of like a little bit ECW-esque, and maybe that's something he's more comfortable with?
Yeah, I think it is, but I think it's good. I mean, they're still out there buying pay-per-views, right?
Oh, yeah.
So if you can nudge them to buy your pay-per-view, and Raven was a huge star there, I think it's good.
Now, this is not, like you said, like, or we'll always say, you don't want to get into patterns. Usually, you start off with, like, a hot cruiserweight match. This time, you start off with basically a hardcore match, kind of anything-goes match. Is there any sort of psychology, any sort of on your mind for changing it up? You just want to keep the crowd hot?
Yeah, we don't want to fall into patterns. And let's start it with something different. And you're not going to take too much of the chance with Raven out there is the ring general.
with Raven, does Bischoff like him? I mean, you like him, obviously, but does Bischoff like him? Do the guys backstage like him?
Oh, yeah, everybody likes him backstage. At least most of the guys did. I mean, no one's everybody's favorite, except a few. Sarah Clayton, they go along well, yeah.
Ever any plans for him to be higher up on the card?
Yeah, I think he would have eventually moved up higher on the card. But we still had the hottest heels and hottest baby faces, so it would have taken a while, but he could have done it easily.
Was he a guy that was like, you know, your guy, so to speak? You know, like bookers always have like their guys. Was he like that for you?
Well, I admired him very much, and I listened to him, and he made sense in almost everything he did.
So the next matchup, Kidman, another member of Raven's Flock, he comes out with Lodi versus Juventud Guerrera. Match goes 10 minutes. Juve gets the victory over Kidman. This match is great. This is almost like that, like I was just mentioning, Cruiserweight opener start of the show. This had that feel to it. Man, great match.
Yeah. I mean, Billy and Juve, Pats can't miss.
This is actually Kidman's pay-per-view debut. Do you know that going in when you're booking some of these guys? Like, oh, this is his debut. We got to make it special. Or it just kind of happens that way?
Well, sometimes it happens that way. But I did know it was Billy at the time. I did know it was Police. And I thought Billy deserved it. I knew he'd have an incredible match.
Were you a big Hoovy fan?
Yes. A lot of people didn't like Hoovy because he's a little crazy, but I like them.
Yeah, I've always heard, you know, attitude issues. Is that true?
That's what I heard, but I never had a problem with them. I think later on they had problems with them.
Yeah, there was a few instances of a few guys over the years saying he refused a job or they weren't supposed to do this in the match, and he kind of took it on his own and went a different direction. And, like, not flighty, but, you know, he kind of just, I don't know, did whatever he wanted, I guess, or thought he could do whatever he wanted.
Yeah, I heard the same thing later on. Yeah, I got him when he was real young. So, yeah, I've heard the same thing.
Even he had a match in WWE, and they told him, hey, no high flying, no, you know, like, you're a certain part of the card, let's tone it down, maybe even almost test him to see if he would listen, and he didn't listen at all. He did all his flying moves and the whole thing, and, you know, they weren't very enthralled with him. It was almost like he just went into business for himself.
Yeah, I could see him doing that. But why would you hire him if you didn't want him to do the high fly moves? You know?
Yeah, kind of taking away his offense there.
Yeah, it's like you buy a Corvette and they say, well, you can't go past 50. Come on. You know what you're buying.
So the next matchup, this is really weird and really interesting because it's supposed to be Eddie Guerrero versus Chavo Guerrero Jr., hair versus hair match. But before that, Chavo, for some reason, challenges Stevie Ray. And I think he's trying to almost like say he wants to get out of the match. I mean, I'm not really sure. But he basically would shake Stevie Ray's hand and he submitted, you know, basically in a minute, submitted to the handshake, and then Chavo said that he was ensuring that he was still 100% for his match with his Uncle Eddie and didn't ruin his health for that match. What's kind of the psychology and setup here that he's got the big hair versus hair match, but before that he's going to lose to Stevie Ray like by a handshake in this like jokey manner?
It was to put, I believe, some levitivity in the match with Chavo, because that character was a little comical, wasn't it, back then?
Oh, yeah, he was wearing the rubber ring out to the ring, and he had a water pistol. Yeah, he was doing the crazy Chavito thing, yeah.
Yeah.
It was just was like, what the heck was that? So then, obviously, Eddie and Chavo have their match. It goes about 12 minutes. Very good match. Eddie defeats Chavo here, and they, you know, shaves his head. But, what did you think here of Eddie going over Chavo in this match?
Eddie was one of the greatest workers of all times. He should have went over. And Chavo's great, too.
But Eddie, at that period, was the more mature worker.
Eddie's awesome. Chavo here, the character, is very funny, because after he loses the hair versus hair match, he shaves his own head and, that, you know, acts like a lunatic like that. He's okay with it. Is that also trying to keep up with, like, this loony character, like he doesn't even care about shaving his own head?
Yeah, absolutely.
I know you don't like brothers feuding, but do you like uncles and nephews feuding?
Not really, but Chavo pulled it off because, you know, he got into the character and he pulled it off. It was like, well, he's a little soft in the head. So it wasn't just for no reason.
Eddie and Chavo, good match. They're very, very solid. Won't say great, but it's close to great. Very, very good between these two. Eddie is a master, and Chavo's really starting to come into his own. Obviously, he's a great wrestler, but character-wise, which is very important, right?
The most important thing is character.
So next up, we have a special bonus match, as they called it. Disco Inferno with Alex Wright versus Conan. Conan, of course, at this point is NWO Wolfpack. He comes out with Lex Luger and Kevin Nash. Conan gets the victory. Match only goes about 2 minutes, but he does cheat. Kevin Nash helps him get the victory here, and then he applies to the Gila Sunrise to a knocked-out Disco Inferno. What do you think here? Was this just a time filler just to get some of these guys in the show?
No. Where did you say we were?
You guys are in San Diego.
Right. What's next door? Do you want
them? Conan's home away from home.
Yeah. Who was biggest star in Mexico ever than Conan?
K-Dog, yeah, definitely.
So that's why he was there in that spot.
Short match, too, only about 2 minutes. But you get Luger, Nash on the card. Not wrestling, of course, but you get them on the card.
Right.
The next matchup, the Giant versus NFL star Mean Kevin Green. The Giant defeats Kevin Green in 7 minutes. Okay match. Nothing great here. Nothing right home about it. I feel like Kevin Green is great. It just kind of depends on maybe who's in there with. Obviously, no pun intended, but he's green. You know, he hasn't been in the ring. But he was good for what he was as far as inexperience. He was great.
He busted his ass to make it work. I had the utmost respect for Kevin Green. I really enjoyed him. God rest his soul, he was a great guy. He was the sack lead of all times one time.
And really, this was going to originally be the Giant and Kurt Hennig versus Goldberg and Kevin Green. Obviously, the football connection there, but since Goldberg won the title, that became Hennig versus Goldberg later on the night for the title, and this became a one-on-one match. Kind of changed your plans a little bit, right? Goldberg being
right.
The champion?
Right, right. But it didn't hurt.
Seemed like Kevin Green, obviously Slamboree 97, we remember that well. And then we had a match before with Mago. I mean, he would kind of show up a few times a year and wrestle for you guys. He seemed to love it.
Yeah, he was very, very good. Very good.
You mentioned the Giant gets the victory, but it does seem like Kevin Green, more so than the others, not saying anything bad about the others, but like celebrities or football players or crossovers, he seemed to take it very seriously.
He certainly did. He was at the power plant every day training. He didn't want to embarrass the company or himself. I just love Kevin Green.
Was he a big wrestling fan? Seemed like he was.
Oh, yes, yes. Huge wrestler and a really respectful guy.
So, not a great match, but not a bad one at all. Not saying that either, but, you know, just was just kind of there. I mean,
well, let's put it this way, JP, could anybody in our locker room do what he did on the football field?
No, not a chance.
So, it transcended better than we could, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, he's one of the greatest defensive players ever. Yeah, he's awesome. You know, Hall of Famer. Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, wasn't he the sack king for a while? Did
he? He was up there on the list. He was very, I mean, he's had, I think, over 150 career sacks. I'll double check, but I mean, he had a ton of sacks.
I think he was for a while, a short while, maybe a season. Did you check?
I'm going to check. Mean Kevin Green. Let's see how many sacks he had for his career. 160 total. Wow, I almost nailed it. Okay, yeah. Pretty good. Very, 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 very high up on the sack list there.
Did it say he was the leader at one time?
It did not when I was looking.
He had to be in the top four, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is he didn't want to embarrass himself or the company. He worked hard.
All-decade team, yeah. 1990, yeah. Absolute legend, monster of the gridiron. But as far as the show is interesting, Lee Marshall, of course, is always there. He's backstage. He's doing some stuff for WWE.com, which you guys are trying to get over. What do you think of just Lee Marshall? Because it's another great announcer you guys kind of have at your disposal.
Tony the Tiger, right?
Oh, yeah. Yes, very true.
Yeah. How many people did iconic commercial like Tony the Tiger? Tastes great.
Yeah. It's awesome. And it's so many people are like, wait a second, that's Lee Marshall? Yeah, it's awesome to kind of realize that.
Yeah.
So next up, this is great. It's an unplanned match or an unplanned segment, so to speak, is for the Cruiserweight Championship. Chris Jericho came out. He was told by J.J. Dillon that he would like him to defend his title tonight against a local competitor. Jericho agreed under the condition that it would be a no disqualification match. J.J. Dillon, of course, revealed that it would be San Diego's own Rey Mysterio Jr. So Rey Mysterio Jr. in the no DQ match defeats Chris Jericho in about 6 minutes to win the WWE Cruiserweight Championship thanks to help from one Dean Malenko. What do you think here?
Very good. I mean, three of the greatest cruiserweights of all times. I think this was sometimes Jericho's best work. Rey Mysterio was brand new, uninjured, and Dean Malenko is one of the greatest technical wrestlers of all times.
It's funny. This is a big return match in his hometown. He was out for 6 months. Remember, he was quote-unquote injured, really hurt his knee, but Jericho injured his knee. So it was like the perfect kind of storm that he would come out and return in his hometown and face the guy that injured him, and he'd beat him, of course, with the help of Dean Malenko. So a pretty good segment here all around.
Yeah, excellent, I thought.
I almost wish the match was longer. Was that a mysterious injury thing? Was that a timing from the pay-per-view thing?
It was the time for the pay-per-view, but this was Ray's first coming back. You don't want to take a chance.
Interesting to note, the following night on Nitro, the World Cruiserweight Championship gets returned back to Jericho due to the fact that there was interference from Dean Malenko during this match. Jericho had went to the WCW rulebook stating that the match could not... The title could not change hands in that match because a suspended competitor interfered, thus the title change being null and void. So Jericho is the champion again the following night. What's up here? Little bait and switch, maybe little tease here. You know,
Jericho thinking outside the box. He's a very, very smart guy. This was his whole angle.
Pretty funny, too, because you finally think he got his comeuppance to heel. Finally, you know, after he's running roughshod over the Cruiserweight division, beating everybody, taking their gimmicks, sending Dean Malenko home, making him quit, all this other stuff. And then the next night, nope, you didn't. I mean, it very, very funny stuff, just very entertaining stuff from Jericho.
Yeah, he's a very entertaining guy. To this day, he's entertaining.
Do you like when the guy's kind of not running his own feud, but do you like when the guy is kind of steering the ship?
Yeah, I want them taken. Quantum taken.
What do you think about just Jericho in general? Just great mind for the business. You trust him?
Oh, absolutely. He's one of the greatest of all times. He's been doing this a long time, and he's been on top a long time, so he knows what he's doing.
just to go back to Kevin Green, because I wanted to look that up, third all time on the sack list behind Bruce Smith and Reggie White. Damn.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah, pretty impressive.
And I think at one time he was number one for a short period.
So the next match. Oh, very, very. The next matchup is for the WCW World Television Championship. Booker T defeated Bret Hart by disqualification, retains his title. Pretty good match, goes about 8 minutes, 30 seconds. What do you think here about Bret Hart for the TV title? I mean, Booker T at this point is kind of in that TV title. He hasn't been pushed to the world title yet, or he hasn't been elevated, so TV title is perfect. But Bret, former WWF World Champion, is going for the TV title? What's up with that?
I think it was good to get Booker into that mix, but I don't think it helped at all, Bret. At that period, I think the belt was beneath him.
And he kind of says he's not NWO, but he comes out to the NWO theme. It almost seems like he's kind of like just downgraded from being like a top-tier main eventer. Do you get that feeling, too? It's like he wasn't the level he should have been at.
Yep. He's pretty hot. Well, so I do get that. Yep.
Did you not want him to win the TV title? I mean, Booker's going to win by DQ. Bret hits him with a chair and beats him up, slaps the figure four around the ring post to him. What do you think?
It wouldn't help Bret. He's one of the biggest stars in the wrestling business. He's the TV champion. I thought it was good for Booker to get in there, but wouldn't be good for Bret.
Good match. Again, I wish it was. I know it's only 8 minutes, 30 seconds. I wish it was longer. Those two did have some good chemistry and some good matches together, but it just felt weird. It's like, wow, Bret should be, you know, maybe Goldberg for the title, maybe Hogan for the title. How come he wasn't higher on the card?
I think there was some background music going on.
Hogan,
you know what I'm saying?
Hogan and Bischoff?
Not Bischoff, but I can remember Hogan saying to me, why would I wrestle Bret Hart when I used to wrestle him and Neidhart in handicap matches?
Wow, it's a different Bret Hart, though. You know, much different, but I guess not in Hogan's mind.
Yeah.
So he didn't even see the value, the fact that he was technically a WWF champion. He got screwed at Survivor Series. He didn't even see any value in Bret then? Like, wow, we got a big star in our hands.
I'm not sure, but some people make an assumption about somebody and it's there for life.
Anything that you could do as a booker to say, hey, we got to get Bret a better position or no?
How can you? You get one guy get creative control.
Does he actually have creative control over, like, the whole WCW or just his stuff?
Well, I suppose it's just his shit, but when he didn't want something to go, it wasn't go.
Too much power, you think?
You tell me.
Leaning that way, for sure. He shouldn't have control over somebody else's creative, yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of those things. He's such a big name. He's bringing 600K viewers. You know what I mean? It's just got to take the good with the bad, I guess.
Yeah, you're going to fight a battle you'll never win. He doesn't have a WCW contract. You know this, right? He has a personal service contract with Ted Turner. You're aware of that?
Right. How much a year do you think he's making?
Oh, I'm sure the downsize was 12, 14 million.
Wow.
I heard Nash and Hall on YouTube say that figure, yes, he was making it. So,
crazy the money. But I mean, I guess at one point, well worth it. So the semi-main event is next. World Heavyweight Championship match. Bill Goldberg, the champion, defeats Kurt Hennig in about 3 minutes and 50 seconds. You know, okay, here, a bit of a squash. Do you think that could have been longer, should have been longer? Maybe give a little bit more love to Kurt Hennig, or that's a perfect amount of time, 3 minutes and 50 seconds?
I would love to give more love to Kurt Hennig. But here's the thing. Kurt knew the position, who was getting pushed. And I'm sure Kurt said, hey, let me get it done quick. So, and Kurt was smart, really smart to the wrestling business. He knew that you couldn't expose Goldberg. And something, here's something funny. If a guy's working that Kurt Hennig is, the longer he stays in there selling, the more it looks like he's selling. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Yeah. So Kurt did the right thing.
Yeah, get in and get out, right?
Yeah.
So that would move Goldberg to 112-0. Again, we were said that it's not the main event, but do you think that Hennig at this point is a world championship title contender, or is he always a championship title contender because he's Kurt Hennig?
He's Kurt Hennig. He's always. Well, we could have done more for Kurt at this period, but he's Kurt Hennig. You know, sometimes people look at people and they don't think that maybe they need a little bit of a brush up, but Kurt is Kurt. He was wonderful.
No problem jobbing to Goldberg, right?
None. True professional.
How's Goldberg's ego check right now? Okay?
Good.
He's not like, I'm world champion, I'm not losing. Like, all this, he's not building any sort of ego?
No. In fact, he knew what Kurt did for him. Yeah, no problem.
Are you happy with Goldberg as champion, or would you think, like, we got to get him in main events? Because he doesn't main event until October, Halloween Havoc 98. I mean, talking about 3 months into his title reign, then he finally gets a pay-per-view main event. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, because he's learning on the job. It wasn't like he was Ric Flair or Jack Briscoe, The Rock, Jericho. He was green. He was green. He needed to be protected.
We have the main event of the evening, the 600K drawing, huge main event here. Hollywood Hogan and Dennis Rodman with the Disciple defeat Diamond Dallas Page and Karl Malone. In about 24 minutes, not a great match, you're not a technical masterpiece, but the crowd is into it, though. I mean, it's definitely over. It's definitely, you know, has a huge level of importance. What did you think here? And obviously, the Disciple cheats and helps Hogan and Rodman win. But what did you think about the match? What did you think about the guys' performances?
It was as good as you're gonna get. As good as you're going to get. You had two guys who had never been really around the wrestling business in the main event. As good as you're going to get.
What do you think about the Disciple at this point? He changed his body. He's completely ripped. He changed his look. What do you think about him?
Yeah, I mean, Brutus can do a lot with his body. Change it and gain weight, lose weight. But he's still Brutus, you know what I mean? He had been through so many given changes. He just should have been one or two gimmicks, you know. I didn't like how many times they changed them. Did you?
No, hated it. The thought was like he became almost like a joke.
Yeah.
With all those flip-flopping the names and stuff. match, you know, it's not great, but, you know, the crowd's into it, so it is what it is. Do you think that DDP and Malone probably should have got the win here, or do you think Hogan and Rodman needed a win for some reason?
Hogan was not going to do a job with Rodman in his corner. He knew the publicity was going to get out.
The year before, though, remember with Luger and the Giant, they beat Hogan and Rodman. Did he not want to lose 2 years in a row with Rodman?
Yeah. And he knew that Rodman was hot right now. He was let go to go wrestle. I mean, let's face it. Everybody's talking about Rodman wrestling during the NBA Finals, right?
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Yeah, so he wasn't going to let that publicity slide by.
Post-match, Karl Malone and DDP do hit dual diamond cutters, one on Charles Robinson, one on the Disciple. So, overall, what do you kind of think of the pay-per-view?
I thought it was pretty good. I have to give it a thumbs up. You know, the people enjoyed it, 600,000 buys. I mean, you had two guys that really never been in the wrestling business on top. I think it did pretty well. What do you say?
I don't know. I thought it was pretty good. I don't mind the first match. I loved the Juventud versus Kidman. I liked Eddie versus Chavo. I really liked Mysterio Jericho. I liked Booker versus Brett, but I just felt like, I wish Goldberg, the Booker T. Brett match, and the Mysterio Jericho match, I just wish they were longer, and I wish the main event was shorter. I know it's kind of a, you know, you're picking at little things here, but I just wish the main event was shorter timing-wise, and some of the other matches were longer.
Yeah, but you know what you're paying Rodman and Malone?
Right. You want to use them as much as you can.
How are you going to justify that to the North Tower? You only use them 6 minutes and they made that kind of money. What's wrong with you? Sometimes it isn't as easy as people think. That's why Vince always was going to win because he's a wrestling company. He wasn't a TV company. And he's a brilliant guy.
Hey, and you look at the pay-per-view overall, 600,000 buys, pretty damn impressive. So, yeah, you're winning there for sure.
Right. And that's the only thing they cared about, the bottom line.
All right, let's head towards the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at @2ManPowerTrip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. You can check out Kevin on Instagram at @TaskmasterTalks. And go to Pro Wrestling Tees, ProWrestlingTees.com, and visit the Kevin Sullivan store. Kevin, what else you got going on?
Well, I've been going fishing the last couple of weeks, so still going to do a little more. And then I'm heading out to StarCast Nashville for Rick's thing, and don't forget to look up Old School Ring Squared on Amazon.
Alright. Alright, awesome stuff. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. See you right back here next week for a little Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. We'll see you next week, folks.